This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD9.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
The Sword and Laser, episode number 141. I'm Veronica Belmont.
Woo, I'm Tom Merritt, all recovered from Dragon Con.
Yeah, tired.
Feeling rested and time traveling.
And time traveling, because we are actually recording this before Dragon Con. We are going to be interviewing author Ari Salvatore today to talk about some of his recently released books, as well as some stuff that he has upcoming in the months to come.
I wonder if he'll let us call him Bob.
I hope he lets us call us Bob. I call him Bob just like when I'm talking about him to you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, I just want to make sure. Bob and me, like, we went to a movie the other night. It was super fun. And then we talked about Chewie. And then we've had Bob on the show several times. We've interviewed him at Dragon Con, which there is still video of somewhere on our website.
Yeah. And, it's a check in the videos. I put it up back in, I think, May.
I feel like I need to check the wiki because I also feel like we had him on the audio show before.
We had him on the video show.
Oh, we had him on the video show proper.
Yeah, and we had him on Dragon Con. So okay. We had him on the audio show from Dragon Con.
Exactly. Right.
Well, you know what about R.A. Salvatore is he just kicked off the new Sundering 6-book series. He's the first of 6 different authors to do it, and it is available, The Companions, Forgotten Realms, The Sundering Book 1, in Audible.
Yes, but before we jump right into the interview, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor.
That was the sponsor.
That was the sponsor?
I was trying to hand it off to you.
Oh, like, I'm bad at segues
in
today.
Audible.
This is because I haven't been drinking today. It's my normal Sword and Laser brain is not in the right spot. But yes, let's thank Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of downloadable digital audiobooks. And of course, with many of the New York Times bestsellers on there. But of course, for listeners of this show, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And it's available on Audible.
You can get it free. If you use our secret information, you don't even have to hold a degree. All you need to do is type in, so I guess you have to type, audiblepodcast.com/sword, and you can get any book you want, but you could get The Companions, Forgotten Realms, The Sundering Book 1 for free, for free.
Awesome. Once again, that is audiblepodcast.com/sword. And if you already have an account, just tell Audible that you love us, that you learned about them on our show, or that you enjoy reading Sword and Laser picks. We always love hearing some feedback over on Twitter. So thank you to Audible. And now we will jump right into our interview with R.A. Salvatore. Joining us today is our wonderful friend, Mr. R.A. Salvatore. May we call you Bob?
Yeah, I think we've dispensed with the formalities. Absolutely.
Have we gotten to that point now? How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm still exhausted from Gen Con. I hate being old, but doing great.
Excellent. And you just came out with a book on August 6th, The Companions, The Sundering Book 1. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, The Companions to me seems almost like the payoff for 25 years of adventure with Dritz and the gang. I felt really good about this one. When the last book came out in March, The Last Threshold, I actually said I should go hide on an island for a while. And that was pretty much true. I got a lot of very upset emails. They weren't mad at me, but they were really upset. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, without giving anything away, I'd say, just wait, just be patient, just be patient. And now this book just feels like the payoff for all of that. It really, in my mind, the purpose of this book was to bring the joy back into the forgotten realms that I think have been missing for a while. And so I think we pulled it off. So
The Sundering is an interesting attempt, an interesting series. You're writing the first one, but then it's going to be taken over by other authors. Can you explain a little bit about what the premise is here?
Yeah, you have to think of the Sundering like World War II, okay? So I just wrote about the Battle of Britain with my characters. And, you know, now Paul Kemp will write about North Africa with his characters. And Erin Evans will write about the Pacific with her characters. All the way up until Ed Greenwood tells us about, you know, the end of it in his book next June. So we're using different characters, different regions of the realms, just talking about this kind of worldwide event that's taking place called The Sundering. My next book, following up the companions with my characters, is called Night of the Hunter, and it'll be out in March of next year.
It seems kind of risky to reset stories like that. So how did you approach the premise?
Well, fourth edition was kind of thrown on us. We weren't really asked. We were told, here's what we're doing. Deal with it. And I remember at that Gen Con when we had the meeting about 4th edition, I raised some objections and said, well, not really 4th edition, but what they did with the realms, the timeline jump in the realms. I raised some objections, but they were going to do what they were going to do. When we left the meeting, Ed Greenwood and I looked at each other and we're like, what are we going to do? And I said, you know, we're going to do the long game. And so we've been preparing for this for a lot of years because we knew it was going to happen. It happened sooner than I anticipated. But we knew it was going to happen. So really what, and I don't think it's just the Forgotten Realms, and I don't want to be unfair to the people at Wizards who did 4th edition and the realms and all of that, but fantasy goes in waves, okay? And a few years ago, it was in the dark time of fantasy, if you will. You know, it was the height of gritty where everybody had to die and everything had to be hopeless and, you know, all this kind of dystopic worlds were popping up everywhere in all the fantasy novels. And you see that. And I've been around long enough to have seen it several times. But you know, it's a temporary thing. And people are going to want to go back to the kind of sword and sorcery, good wins over evil, joyous adventure of fantasy. And that's what the realms was when I started in the realms. And that's what the realms will be again after the Sundering.
Did you work with the other authors in The Sundering and coordinate much, or did you guys kind of say, I'm going to take this part, I'm going to take this part, and go your own separate ways?
A little of both. I mean, we had a big summit meeting up at Wizards. Wizards is doing this very well. They're doing it. Everything they're doing right, which makes me happy. Okay? They brought us all in, and they didn't tell us what was happening. They said, here's what we're doing with the game. Here's some of the things we'd like to do. How do you think this will affect the world? And then they let us tell them, mostly Ed tell them, which is the way it's supposed to be. It's his world. So, but the six of us, you know, we sat down and we plotted out things that would make sense. Where would the big conflicts be? Where would the big problems be? Who could handle what parts of this huge conflict called the Sundering? And, you know, there's been a little bit of coordination back and forth between that. You know, hopefully putting Easter eggs in the books for people who have read some of the other books, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we're on our own. We're not really sharing plot lines or anything like that.
Wow. So there have been some amazing reviews so far for The Companions. BarnesandNoble.com wrote, The Companions is the best novel that he's written to date. It's insanely courageous, profoundly powerful, masterfully constructed, and easily his most ambitious work to date. How do you feel about that? I mean, that's awesome.
Got to make you feel good.
Congratulations. Yeah. I mean, that's a great review.
Well, the first thing I told Wizards of the Coast this year is make sure Paul Goat Allen at Barnes & Noble gets the last threshold in. Well, no, Paul gets stressed. Uh-huh. Paul has been there from the beginning. And I remember last year he put my book in his top 10 fantasy books of the year. Karen's Claw. And people were like, how can you put that in there? This is like the 30th book. And he goes, just read it. You know? And Paul gets Dritz. He understands. So I knew that he's really the people, he's really the target type of person that I wrote this book for. And this series, how I turned the series with The Last Threshold and then The Companions. And, you know, sometimes you write something and you just know I nailed it. And I felt that way with this book. And the first like 10 people who read the book before it ever came out all said the same thing to me, is that this is the best Dritz book you've ever done. Sometimes it just feels right. And so, yeah, I mean, I love that Paul loved it. Okay. And I've been hearing that. I mean, if you go to Amazon, or you'll probably see the same thing, but you should see the letters I'm getting, the emails. I'm getting 50 a day on Facebook and through my email, at least 50 a day, which is a lot of work because I answer them all. But it's wonderful work because these are people that are taking the journey beside me. That's what it feels like now, that they're walking down this road beside me. And it's a pretty cool thing to share. And, you know, very few. In fact, I haven't gotten an email that's been negative. There have been a few people who are grumbling, but there are always a few people who are grumbling. But almost universally, the people appreciate this return to a sense of joy and payoff, and that heroes can be rewarded too and not just punished all the time by sadistic authors like me. And but, you know, a few years ago, Paul did a piece for one of my books, and he called it The Tao of Dritz. It was more than a piece for the book. It was more like his reflections on the Dritz series. And that and a piece called I Am a Dark Elf by the author Ali Etaraz are the two pieces that I almost wear as armor against people who say that's popcorn fantasy. Because, you know, I don't mind if people think these books are just popcorn fantasy, lighthearted sword and sorcery adventure books or whatever. I don't care. I don't care if somebody reads them just for a little bit of escapism or what. But I know that to a lot of my readers, these guys are friends. These characters have become friends. I get email all the time from people who say that these books have helped them through dark times in their lives, usually like high school kids who didn't have any friends, or soldiers serving overseas, or someone who's going through a medical issue, whatever. And so when somebody says to me, oh, those are fun books that for popcorn fantasy, you know, and they kind of give me a left-handed compliment, as we used to say. From my perspective, that's fine. Great. I don't care. But it kind of bothered me that they're almost demeaning the feelings of the people who have gone into these books on a much, much deeper level than that.
Now, I can back it up. If people out there listening, you think, well, of course, RA is going to say he's got these great reviews. Go look at the Amazon reviews for The Companions. I have never seen a greater distribution towards fives. In fact, when I looked, there was only one star. That's probably the one guy still mad about Chewie or something. It's kind of incredible in an open forum like that to have that much positivity towards anything on the internet. So that's pretty impressive.
Well, I mean, I did a Reddit the other day, and I don't know how many people actually came on at the end, but I probably answered 500, and I don't think I got to a tenth of them.
Oh, sure.
It was a crazy Reddit. And, you know, I scrolled through at the end, tried to read as many as I could after I was done, just went back on it, you know. And there were one or two taking shots. There was one guy taking personal shots very nastily, as usual.
There's always
Reddits
that guy.
Like that. And there was one guy who said, you know, you don't write speculative fiction. You write piss poor books for 12-year-old boys. And it's like, you know, what, you can't answer it, so you don't even bother. But It's like, did you read the other 1,000 people who were talking about how these books got them into reading, or these books helped them through cancer, or these books helped them through their tour in Iraq, or these, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't get the world anymore. I just don't. It's like everybody seems to want to be miserable and want to spread it around to other people. And I have no time for that. Life's way too short.
There's always those thousands of people who are positive, and then there's the one guy who just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Unfortunately, I think it's more than one.
Yeah.
Now I think it's more than one, and I think that's the problem. And I think maybe it's because people spend too much time behind the computer screen and don't go out and see other people face to face. I don't know what it is, but life's too damn short for that. It really is.
It's true.
Seriously. Looking ahead towards the rest of The Sundering, do you know what we can expect, or are you as in the dark as the rest of us?
Oh, no, I know what to expect.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you.
No, of course not.
I can tell you right now that it's, I think you're going to be able to expect some pretty darn good books. And the reason I say that is because, like, Paul Kemp's up next, and Paul Kemp's a hell of a writer. He did the last book in the War of the Spider Queen, and it was really wonderful. He came in under almost impossible circumstances and just pulled it off beautifully. He's a great writer. And then like Aaron Evans, who I've just discovered, because my editor at Watts, he said, have you read Brimstone Angels? And I said, no. She goes, oh, you have to read this book. And I'm reading the book, and it's like, oh, wow, Aaron's really good. And she's doing the next one. In December. Paul's is in October. Aaron's is in December. We all know what Richard Lee Byers can do. He did the first book in War of the Spider Queen, and he's the reason that that series was a New York Times best-selling series. His characterizations are amazing. He's a great writer. And Troy Denning's back for the fifth book. Troy Denning. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember Troy. He's been lost in Star Wars land for the last decade or so, but Troy's fabulous. I begged Wizards to bring Troy back for this because they were trying to get back to what the realms was, and to me, you can't do better than bringing Troy back.
That's
and then they actually let me make the call to invite him to come to the summit to be a part of the Sundering, which was awesome.
Cool.
And then, of course, Ed Greenwood finishes it appropriately. I mean, Ed Greenwood, it's his world, and we're back to his vision. So, you know, I think what you can expect is some pretty strong storytelling.
It's like a
which makes me happy.
Now, before we get to some of our audience questions, you have a Kickstarter going right now.
I sure do.
By the time this interview comes out, the Kickstarter will have already succeeded because you've already surpassed your goal. But at the time of recording, it's still going strong.
Yeah, I do. And it's been an interesting experience. I mulled it over for about a year whether I really wanted to do a Kickstarter or not. I was watching other people do them. And I decided, my son, I had a game that I had created many years ago. And you know, it was just another game that somebody creates. I don't think it was anything beyond. We played a few times. My son, Brian, is a game designer, and he was making a game. And I looked at what he was doing, and I went, holy cow, this is amazing. So I showed him my old skeleton of a game from my Demon Wars world. And he took it, and he married the two together and fixed it. And we started playing in January with my group, and we haven't looked back. We're having a blast. The game needed some tweaks. We've been tweaking it as we go, but everybody's showing up early. Everybody wants to play, and it hasn't been like this in many years with my group. This game is just that much fun. So I said, you know, we got to get this out there. So we decided to do a Kickstarter. And the reason I decided to do a Kickstarter is because Kickstarter puts you right back in the trenches, and I love that. There's no place to hide. You're accountable. You're out there naked. I mean, this is what we're doing, and now you have to deliver. And I love that. You can't hide behind a marketing team.
That's great.
You know, when I look at it that way, it's like, okay, let's do this. And I've been wanting to try it because if I go back to Demon Wars, and now I think I will, to do novels, I may independently publish them.
Oh, I just, interesting.
Well, you know, the paradigm has changed so much in publishing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the publishing contracts still reflect the time when publishers had to have, you know, hundreds of salesmen going to all these little mom and pop stores, and they had to have, you know, they had to print 100,000 books to sell 40,000 books and take a big hit on the back end with printing. And they had to deal with massive returns from stores all the time. That's all changed. I mean, you make three phone calls now when you've sold 90% of your books, right? Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and then one of the distributors, like, or Baker & Taylor and Ingram or whatever.
Yeah.
A few phone calls, you're done. For the bulk of it. And beyond that, you know, you don't have to print 100,000 books to sell 40,000 anymore. You have this thing called just-in-time inventory where bookstores will stock enough books to last them 2 days because you can get books to them 2 days later. It's that efficient now. And now you got ebooks, which has no returns. And ebooks are becoming a bigger and bigger part of it, and there are no returns. But the publisher's contracts don't reflect that. They still take enormous reserves. They still take an enormous cut of the money. And quite frankly, I'm just not sure that the publishers are delivering enough to justify their cut anymore. And I'm not the only author thinking this way. A lot of us are thinking this way. It's just that going out on your own is a lot of work.
Yeah, we're definitely hearing that from a lot of authors as we talk to people more and more. They used to be, well, I'm looking at what's happening, and now it's more, I'm thinking about taking a step in. It's definitely changing.
Well, I mean, I'll stay with Wizards and stay with the Dark Elf books, but that's because I want to stay with the Dark Elf books in their world. But, you know, for the rest of it, I mean, I've got 120,000 people on my Facebook account, and it's climbing every day, and, you know, I can hire a publicity firm, I can hire an editor, I can hire an artist. These people are all friends of mine. I can hire what I need to get the things done without giving away a substantial portion of the book. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to self-publish, but when I go to talk to Tor and Del Rey, I'm certainly going to have it in my mind that I can self-publish.
Yeah, keep it in your pocket.
Yeah. And the other thing, honestly, the other thing that bothers me is that publishers, they don't listen to you at all for things like covers or titles. Or, I mean, they have people whose job depends on them designing the cover. So if you have a cool idea, you're threatening their job. Mm-hmm. Once again, I like to be in the trenches. I like to be accountable. If my name's on it, I want to be at least partially responsible for everything in it.
Well, if you guys want to check out the Kickstarter for Demon Wars Reformation, we'll have a link to it in the show notes. But before we get to our audience questions, let's take a moment to thank one of our sponsors.
Yeah, one of the things we do at Sword and Laser at swordandlaser.com is we have a website. It's a place for us to put all our podcasts on, put posts about the anthology, old video episodes when we get the rights back to them, and we would be so much harder to do that without Squarespace. We use Squarespace.com. Squarespace can be used by you too. It's a great place if you got portfolios, if you want to do a gallery, if you want to do a business website, you want to sell things. They've got merchant accounts. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website. And you can get 20% off, 20% off now if you go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD9. I was updating the calendar for this very episode. It's so much faster with Squarespace. It's got this what you see is what you get interface. Beautiful design, believe me. Veronica might have been able to come up with a good-looking design, but I certainly couldn't have. And it was so much easier to just use Squarespace, use those templates, and build on that. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, too, that matches the overall style of your website to the screen. So your content looks good on a phone, it looks good on a tablet, looks good on a laptop, looks good on a big old desktop. But you don't have to take our word for it. Go try it off. Just $8 a month, but you don't have to pay a cent to try it. You don't even have to give them a credit card, nothing. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, do make sure to use the offer code SWORD9 to get 20% off. 20% off. And to show your support for Sword and Laser. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.
All right, we are still joined by author Ari Salvatore, and we have some questions from our audience today, starting with this one from Alan, who writes, which of his books would he recommend as a good first book entry point for a fantasy and sci-fi reader who hasn't read any Forgotten Realms and really doesn't want the to-read pile to grow too big by getting sucked into an entire universe?
Well, see, you're missing the whole point, right? if you want to try the Dark Elf books, start with Homeland. And then you can read 1, 3, 6, 50, I don't care. You know, however, if you want to read something that's a little smaller in scale in terms of the number of books, I would suggest The Highwayman, which is one of my favorites.
Very cool.
So either Homeland or The Highwayman.
David has a question that I think we've asked you before, but he's got a good follow-up question. How difficult is it to kill off characters after you've written them for so long? And is there a chance of a short story or novel recounting Wolfgar's final years in Icewind Dale?
There is a short story recounting Wolfgar's final years in Icewind Dale.
100% chance.
Second part first. There already is. It's in the collected stories of the Legend of Dritz, the anthology that came out a couple of years ago. And it's called To Legend He Goes. So there is one. It's already out there. And to answer the other part, it's brutal. I mean, if you read the prelude to the Ghost King, I talked about waking up every morning and watching three videos that would put me back in the darkest place of my life, a place I never wanted to go back to. but I knew I had to go there to do what I had to do in the Ghost King and do it right. I mean, it's brutal. These are your friends. So, of course, it's difficult.
What were the three videos?
They were all Fleetwood Mac. One was Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks. One was, has anyone ever written anything for you? Stevie Nicks from 2002, I think. One was from the Mirage Tour, 1982, Sisters of the Moon, which I think is one of the most amazing videos you'll ever see. And then the other one was from Stevie Nicks' White Winged Dove Tour, I think. It was when she did Rhiannon, but there was a beautiful piano accompaniment to it. So those three, and they really put me back into I love them, but they put me into a place that's very somber and, I don't want to go back there often.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Ben writes, you have written many books in the Forgotten Realms universe. Other than the D&D-related worlds, which created worlds would you be most excited to be writing in if you got the chance?
Outside of mine? Because mine would be Demon Wars, which is why I'm trying to make the chance again with the Kickstarter.
Ah.
Outside of that, I don't know. You know, when I first started playing EverQuest, I thought I could write 100 books in Norrath. I really did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that world. I think they did a brilliant job in constructing that world. World of Warcraft kind of got away from me. There's so much lore there, and it's almost would bury anything I wanted to do. I did go into Star Wars for a couple of books. Don't know that I'll ever be going back. So, I don't know. I mean, to me, I like writing my own thing. In the realms, one of the things I like the most about the realms as opposed to other shared world is that I can make my own characters and create my own areas and stay away from everybody else most of the time. That's the way I like to do it.
And then our last submitted question from Eric on Twitter. He wants to know how you are able to do such amazing sword fighting sequences when most other authors fail at it.
I play hockey.
Just hold the stick up.
I was a boxer. Some friends and I had a boxing club in high school, and then I paid my way through college as a bouncer. So, and it's funny because David Gemmel did the same thing. David and I were comparing notes and bruises. We looked like Quentin Hooper and Jaws comparing scars from bouncer days at San Diego Comic-Con many years ago before we lost David. I've always been into sports, watching and playing. Watching the body movements of the body has been like a pastime of mine. I think it's absolutely beautiful to watch an athlete at work. I used to watch boxing a lot. And because I was a boxer for a little bit, and because I was a bouncer, the first thing you learn is the most important thing in any fight, other than a gunfight maybe, is where your feet are. How balanced are you? You hit harder when you're balanced, you move faster, you can get out of the way, you can take a punch, you can give a punch, whatever. So when I'm writing battle scenes, I just watch it in my head and write down what I see. And the only tricks I use is that I try to excise all forms of the verb to be. No was, no were, no passive verbs. Get rid of them, throw them out. I go with action verbs and I keep the sentences shorter and the paragraphs get shorter and the pulses get pounding and I just keep banging it like that. I want the reader's tempo picking up the way the action is picking up at the same time. It's just instinctive. It really came out of frustration more than anything else because I get tired of reading books where you're about to have this great battle scene and it just never happened. And then you just hear about it after. I think I should have been a choreographer for movies.
Never too late. Never too
late. Have you heard about Neal Stephenson's sword fighting simulator that he kickstarted?
Clang.
No. You're kidding me. Did he really?
Yeah, he got $500,000 more. And they're working on a...
You would have got a lot more than that if I had known about that.
Full motion sword fighting simulator based on European tradition, long sword tradition.
Wow. That's awesome.
You should definitely check that out. It's pretty cool.
It's called Clang?
Clang. Yeah. C-L-A-N-G.
Oh, I got to check that out.
I think it's C-L-A-N-G. It might be K-L-A-N-G.
Yeah. No, it's C. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I'll find it. I'll just look for Neil.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
And finally today, so what can you tell us about Night of the Hunter coming out in March?
Absolutely nothing, of course.
Secrets. Oh.
Man, no, actually, as I was writing Companions, and I see some of the things that are going on in the Sundering, I knew big conflicts that were coming up. that I could really exploit for my own pleasure. And so we've got, you know, I've got a little war to fight, and I've got also I'm back in Menzel Barons. I'm back in the Dark Elf homeland for a lot of that book and the book next summer that I'm working on now. And I'm playing with the drow again, and it's so much fun.
That's awesome. Well, you guys can find more information about Bob over at rasalvatore.com. Anything else you want to pitch on the show today?
Oh, pitch? Sure. My wife will kill me if I don't pitch this. And she just we just opened up a little store called RA Salva Store. How's that? rasalvastore.com. Well, so many people write to me and say, I want, you know, you're not coming to my area. I really want to get this book signed. Can I mail it to you? Mm-hmm. And I hate doing that because I'll get the book and they'll forget to put a return address. Mm-hmm. And so my wife opened up an online store with all my books and some merchandise. And I named my softball team Clan Battlehammer this year. I couldn't name it 38 Studios anymore. They're gone. So I named it Clan Battlehammer, and everybody wants the shirts or want the hats. So we opened up a little online store.
That's awesome.
rasalvastore.com.
That is a very funny name. That is awesome. Good.
I came up with the name. Diane groaned and said, "You're an idiot," and walked away. And then she used it.
Tom and I both appreciate a good pun.
Oh, so yeah.
We're not complaining.
Yeah. Kudos. Well,
Bob, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Always my pleasure.